Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel. He scores! Cortinel!
Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Hurry, I'm ready. Fuck, no, I'm not. Oh, well, my God. Steve and I have been sitting here for half an hour, you jackass.
No, you haven't. You've been sitting here for 3 minutes.
Bullshit.
Well, I had the carpet.
Oh, come on. Oh, yeah. And you got to make a coffee and walk your fucking cats. Oh.
I got rid of the cats, Rusty.
I know you did.
What's going on, Rusty?
Hey, you're on Instagram. You got to check out PGA Tour.
Yeah.
I'm going to send it to you right now.
On Instagram?
Yeah. And just go to Tiger number 10. And it's all my kids in my house and my son and his friends in the background on Saturday cheering him on when he made a beautiful flop shot.
Oh, there they are. Oh, there's Lawton right there.
Yeah, after he makes the putt, he waves at them and then they put them up on the screen. All right. Oh, yeah. Now.
What a fucking shot he hits here.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's get this ship a rolling. Let's get this ship a sailing before I get beat up anymore. Hi again, everybody. It's Jungle Jim Jerome coming at you with another episode of The Suspendables with the longtime NHLer, Russ Cortinel, who's back again this week. Rusty, how are you?
Woo! Just came off a four-dayer, the Zozo tournament.
We got a lot of people. I want to talk about that, amongst other things. But, of course, you spent the week at home. You're back in L.A., and you live on Sherwood. And, of course, the Zozo Championship was all this past week right on Sherwood. And when you say you live in Sherwood, you live right on the golf course. Your house is on on the 13th hole or fourth hole for this tournament. So we want to talk about that. A couple other things. What's it like getting traded? I had a number of people reach out through email and some of the Twitter stuff saying, what happens on the day you get it traded? Also, the schedule. Russ, they're talking about trying to get hockey going January 1st, it looks like, or sometime in January. Daly there, the assistant to the commissioner,
yeah,
Bill Daly, was really sort of ambivalent about the whole thing. He didn't really say much. He said there's just so much to consider with bubbles and of course, you know, COVID and families and travel and all this stuff, because there's different restrictions in the States than there is in Canada. Anyway, he didn't say much, but we're going to talk about that. So part of that, Russ, means there may be a Canadian division in this rescheduling. And I thought, well, maybe I'll ask Russ what he thinks of the whole alignment now, the way it is for playoffs with multiple divisions, you know, a couple of conferences. Is it time now, Russ, that maybe we have a look at changing some of that? I personally don't like it, but we'll see. The big story that we're going to get to after we find out about your week, Russ, is the Phoenix Coyotes' first round draft pick is a kid named Mitchell Miller, who admitted 4 years ago that he bullied a classmate of his, actually developmentally handicapped child in his class who was sort of 4 years behind everyone mentally. Wow. He was black, and he ended up getting terribly, terribly abused by this guy. And he admitted to it in court 4 years ago. The Coyotes knew this, and they went ahead and drafted him. And it's kind of a viral story. There's more stuff coming out every hour about it. And we want to speak to you about that. So that and much, much more. But let's hear about your week, Russ. Tell us all about it now. Okay. Walk us through slowly.
So I'm trying to be respectful for COVID. Don't really know the rules of how many people you can have over to the house. So I was sending out text invites to people.
Yes.
10 a.m. till 4 dot, dot, dot. meaning who knows when it's going to end. Had to go to Costco every day, Thursday, Friday, Sunday. I hosted parties, cooked everything, had a full bar going.
No way.
It was just a blast. But I'm hanging out with my son and his buddies from Western Michigan. They flew in for the tournament. And then, of course, Lawton invited some of his schoolmates from when he went to school here over. So we got that, you know, you got the younger, energetic crowd. and then you got my friends, you know, my age or older.
The wine drinkers. Maybe.
The wine drinkers. And so the kids are like, you hear the ice shaker going, the martini shaker, and they're mixing cold shots of tequila, like right off the hop.
Yeah.
So, of course, you know, had to partake a little bit.
Yeah, you're never shy away, Rusty. Yeah.
So I, you know, normally I'd kind of wait till 5, 6 o'clock. Not, you know, most days. Yeah. But I had the coffee going outside. I set up instead of Bloody Marys, I went with the Canadian Caesar.
Yeah.
So I had the Caesar bar and Bailey's and coffee to start the day for everyone.
Nice.
And then we had full bar. So it was so much fun. But oh my God, I'm so bagged right now. It's like four solid 10-hour days.
Yeah. So what's it like, Russ? Of course, I watched it, knowing where you were, and I saw clips of you guys a couple of times. Obviously, I wanted more video. I was trying to tweet the Golf Channel to give him the whole story. Hey, my buddy Russ, former NHLer, he's the guy there disturbing everyone while they're putting out on number 13. So we saw you guys a few times, but you could hear you on every hole. And I thought I wonder if at some point an official from the PGA is going to come over, because Russ loves to do it up and say, okay, you got to pipe down when these guys are on the green. But it kind of reminded me of the Phoenix Open, where it's just one big party atmosphere. How was it, Russ? Did you get in any trouble from the PGA or anything?
No one came over, and we were not allowed on the golf course. Normally, when we have a PGA event at Sherwood, we can, as members, we get 2 free passes so we can walk around. And I would have gone down to as close as I could have to the green just to hear if we were making too much noise, but we couldn't do that. And no one came up and said anything to us. In fact, anybody who drove by from the PGA was like, you guys got the best seat in the house. And so we didn't have any issues. I respectfully had the sound, the music only on in the house.
Yeah.
And I said, Lawton, when the last group are done, then we can crank the tunes up. So the noise you hear is just those voices. I mean, people are talking, they're, you know, and it's a crowd, and it just gets louder. And every time someone orders another tequila or another freaking beer or whatever, the voices just get louder and louder and louder. So Saturday was probably our loudest crowd, because Lawton had he had a bigger party than me. Yeah. And I'm at another friend's house. He's on number 7 and 8. Six and seven. He's on number 6 and 7. He's got a really cool house. Name's Jamie Ashton. Great guy. Good friend. Right. So he has this unbelievable party, and it's like, he's got it freaking staffed. Like, I'm running the barbecue. I'm running around. Like, I say, what do you want to drink? Help yourself.
Right. And,
Sunday I hired a bartender for a few hours, but the rest of the time it was, you know, me cooking and everybody helped themselves. So normal party, his party, 14 people, security guards, catered, you know, probably spent $50,000 on the party. Anyway, so I get a text message from Lot, and he goes, we're on TV. And I'm like, oh my God, no.
No.
Yeah. So he sends me a picture of that video of them cheering for Tiger on Saturday when he made that great flop shot in front of our house. And so I was like, oh my God, what's going to happen now? But we didn't hear anything. And we were pretty, I think, you know, we're respectful for when they were on the greens, we were really trying to be quiet, but obviously it wasn't always that way. But we got, you know, Matt Kuchar, yesterday when he was going by, I had some Gauzer members, at my house, and he looked up and knew where I live. And so, he gave us the wave and shaka, cool. And I gave him the go gauzer yell, and he was loving it. And then Patrick Cantley, who won,
yeah,
he was at Gauzer last year for a couple of weeks, and so I got to know Patrick and his team, and I invited them over after he won. I said, "Look, I'm like right on the fourth hole. Just come over, and I'll open up some wine." Patrick likes the odd glass of wine.
That a boy.
So I invited them over, but he said they were going right back to Florida, so they're jumping on, I'm sure, a private plane and heading back to Florida. And they all the PGA has a strict COVID policy. So if any of them test positive,
yeah,
they have to stay in the hotel room for 12 days wherever they're at. So one of the guys here tested positive, and he's at the Hyatt on the freaking freeway for 12 days.
Oh, I know where that is. That's a nice place.
Yeah, it's not bad, but you know, Dustin and Paulina are stuck at the Bellagio in Vegas.
Stuck at the Bellagio in Vegas.
Well, he's got 12 days too.
Yeah, I realize that. So did any players make it over to your house, Russ, during the 4 days?
No, they did not.
They're probably frightened. They saw
it. Yeah. I invited Sibby Kuchar, Matt's wife.
Yeah.
They were staying with friends of ours who were members of Gauzer, and Matt is very nervous about the whole COVID thing because it'll affect, you know, him. I think it's because he just doesn't, you know, obviously doesn't want to get it, so he can't play in tournaments. I think that's why. He's a young, healthy guy, and I don't think he's paranoid for any other reason other than missing golf. So they didn't come over, but they were invited, and Cantley's were invited, and they all blew me off, Jimmy. They all blew me off.
No way, Russ. You're the guy.
Yeah, you're the guy. Saw the party and they didn't want to come over.
Yeah, they're probably frightened. Yeah. What had set you back? 4 days. Okay, 4 days of partying at Courtnell's house in Sherwood, booze and food. I'm guessing you must have spent 10 grand.
No, I didn't spend that much because, close. You know, we're in the U.S., so booze is a lot cheaper, and I go to Costco. I definitely, like in the last 4 days, I spent 2 grand at Costco.
But, oh, did you?
Yeah, but that doesn't count all
that's
the
deep
wine and stuff that, so I don't even know. So it's more than 2000.
Right.
But it's not 10. It better not be freaking 10, but
you'll see.
It's probably maybe with the other stuff, maybe 3 or 4. I don't know. Something like that.
But the bottles of wine that you already have are no less than 100 per probably.
And that's where I've got to. I'm looking over my left shoulder right now to see where the holes are.
The holes in the wine cellar.
So I'll give you an example. Like Saturday night at the end of the night. Like it's the end of the night. We're smoking cigars outside. I got a great fire
to wind down.
Yeah. And, you know, I poured a Macallan 12-year on ice. I'm just sipping it, having my last cigar. And it's my fourth of the day, but my freaking son rolls out with a Bure, and I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Like in my
Bure wine?
Yeah. It's like, I'm like, are you kidding me? Like it's the end of the night. The last thing we should be opening is a freaking good bottle of Bure.
Yeah.
He did come over actually, Val. So Val was over. We had a good time.
Cool.
Anyways, if I look over my left shoulder right now and I see where the holes are in the wine cellar, in the slots that are empty. I can tell, I'll be able to quickly tell after the show, you know, what the expensive stuff that was gone.
You remind me of a great story, you know, and everyone's, you know, who's listened to this show has fallen in love with you and your life and your lifestyle and stuff like that. It's people really get a kick out of it. I was reading a number of emails this morning that they feel like they're flies on the wall, you know, at your house and how you bring everyone inside. A friend of mine, they're out for lunch, big hitters, and they're out for lunch. And the bill comes and my buddy says, it's actually Billy Comrie. Okay. Who, you know, the brick guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And super generous guy, right? He's always
my God. He's the best.
And he grabs the tab and says, I'll get it. And the waiter is standing there. Mm-hmm. And a buddy of his, okay, Tim, says, Billy, what? It's Christmas time. Make sure you give her 30%, right? In front of the waiter, right? And Bill looks at him and says, you prick. You little prick, right? And, and typical of Bill, he gave him, I don't know, 30 or 35%. And he told the guy, I am going to get you back for that. You never, ever do that. You know,
that's bad to me. Yeah.
So sure enough, these guys are lifelong friends. Billy's patient. Okay. Yeah. And a year later at Christmas time, Billy, because they get together every Christmas for the big slosh. Uh-huh. And so all the boys are out and it's time to pay the bill. They've been there for 4 or 5 hours, Russ. They meet at 11 in the morning. It's Christmas lunch. And the bill comes and Billy immediately grabs it and his buddy Tim is there again. And he says, oh yeah, let me get that, boys. And he says, Timmy, what should I give him this year? You know, and Tim says, well, you know, you roll pretty good there, Billy. You know, give him 25, 30%. And Billy goes, what about this would really make the kids' day. So this bill's probably 4 or 5 grand, okay?
Yeah.
He says, what about if I whacked him with 100% tip? And Tim goes, oh, yeah, that'd be fantastic, you know? Billy goes, let's do it. I'm going to do 100% plus the 15% that you normally give, okay? So the 5 grand bill is now almost 11,000.
Yeah.
Okay? So Billy signs it up. The kid starts crying, right? He's crying and all this stuff. And the staff comes over and all that stuff. And Billy says, no problem. Anytime you guys, you deserve it. And everyone breaks up and they all go away. And then Billy turns to Tim and goes, here's your credit card. He nipped his credit card out of his wallet.
That is so good.
Isn't that the best? He went for a leak. Tim went for a leak. Yeah. He immediately went into his wallet, grabbed his Amex card. Maybe he should make it 100%, Bill.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that a great move?
That is so good.
Yeah. So tell Lawton, you better settle down. Don't be grabbing Dad's expensive wallet. Yeah,
no kidding.
So you had a hell of a week. That's great. Congratulations to Patrick Cantlay. The other thing, Russ, is there. I've played Sherwood a bunch of times, and it's no easy golf course. You know, it's got it all. It's got it all. You know, the tough greens, the multiple tee decks, high rough, narrow fairways, undulating, you know, bunkers deep and all that stuff. And these guys absolutely ripped it apart. Ripped it apart.
Just throttled it.
Throttled it, 24 under, but he only wins by one.
Yeah.
He only wins by a shot and only two shots over third place, fourth place. The Canadian kid did really well, Corey Connors. You must be kind of laughing, Russ, going, how good are these freaking guys?
Oh, my God.
How freaking good are they?
Playing from the tips.
Yeah, it's 70 over, well over 7,000 yards, right, from the tip.
When we play from the blacks, and a lot
of times.
Are those
the tips?
No. A lot of times, if you want to count from the tips, they would be the third tee box. So there's even a, you know, that you can even go back further for us. So we're playing. I just was shaking my head. Like, these guys are just destroying the course, and there are two tee boxes back from what we normally play.
Right.
I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing how good they are.
Yeah. Well, the reason is there's 5 par fives on that golf course, which makes it totally unique. And all of them are reachable for these guys in two. So they kind of predicted the scores would go low. And with no fans, you know, they do like it. They do like it without the fans. If they're really honest, they hate to say it because the PGA goes out of their mind, you know, when they go on and go, this is great with no fans. I can really bear down. Congratulations to him. Congratulations to you, Russ, surviving the week.
I think I smoked about 16 cigars.
You smoked 16 cigars this week?
I think I did.
Not a boy.
I think I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Good. Welcome to the dark side. Mm-hmm.
Feels like I dragged my tongue on the freaking pavement for about 100 yards.
My dad, I used to sit out on my parents' back deck smoking like a cigarette one after another. You know how funny my old man was.
Yeah.
You know? Are they electing a pope out there? What the- So they probably thought you were electing a pope, Russ, in your backyard.
And you know, these the kids, like, I got nice cigars, right? I got this great connection out of New York. I get Cubans, and here are the drunk 25-year-olds. the drunk 25-year-olds are out there. I come out. They've taken like three puffs out of a freaking great cigar and then sitting in the ashtray. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, oh,
I hear.
It just drove me nuts.
Well, your kids say you're a little twitchy. The stuff we don't know about Russ. Yeah.
Oh.
They say you're a little twitchy.
Well, I would go buy Old Port Tips if that was what they were going to do. Like, I mean, why smoke a really nice cigar if you're, it'd be like opening a bottle of champagne and having a sip and then letting it just sit there. I mean, it's the same thing.
It's unheard of. Yeah, you can't do that.
You gotta fucking pound that mother. You gotta.
A reminder, the Suspendables are engaged on Facebook, and your comments are always welcome.
So, Rusty, the league, the NHL, is talking about starting up in January, but that's about it. That's about all we know. How they're going to do it, we're not exactly sure, but that's the latest news. Whether they're going to do it by bubble, whether how teams, you know, there might be a few hub cities, more than just the two they had in the playoffs. Out of that, because there's a two-week quarantine period in Canada, mm-hmm. The league is saying, well, maybe then we have to go to an all-Canadian division because of COVID. And then that's made a lot of people think, what about an all-Canadian division anyway? And so, Russ, you've played under a couple of different formats, right, when you had the Smythe division. Mm-hmm. That's a long time ago now, right? 20-plus mm-hmm. years ago. And since the time you played, Russ, everyone flies private now. It's all charter that all the players do. And I always said, you know, is it really an accurate way to see who gets into the playoffs the way they do it now? What do you think, Russ? Is it time to get rid of some of the divisions and make it a simpler alignment in the NHL?
It's just not easy. And it's a lot of it's due to geographical, where the teams fall closest to one another to make it less, you know, less travel.
Right.
So having an all Canadian division would just knock the shit out of all the teams. You know, the East, the guys in the middle, I guess Winnipeg would
love it.
Calgary. Yeah. But everybody, can you imagine the travel they would be doing back
Vancouver to Montreal?
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Four times a year.
Ottawa. I mean, it would be brutal where you get those East Coast divisions and they're, you know, they're almost in their own bed every night. And there's always an advantage for those Eastern teams because they just don't travel like the West. So
do you really believe that, Russ, because of the travel?
Oh, for sure. For sure. Because the travel wears you out. I mean, the travel wears on the body, the flying. I mean, dehydrates the body. I mean, the more time you're in the air, I mean, it takes its toll. So I don't think that would work. I think it's a cool idea. Like as far as I think it's kind of neat that we'd have a Canadian division. Yeah, I think that's great. But I mean, it wouldn't be fair.
Well, you got the Islanders, the Rangers, Philly, Jersey. Yeah. Those guys, they can all walk to the rink to all those games. Yeah. Should you take some of those teams out of that, Russ, and make it a little more fair on the travel? Like,
well, and then okay, yeah, you do that, and then who's it fair for, and who isn't? And then you politically, you're going to have a tough, someone's not going to be happy. So someone's going to get screwed.
Right.
I just, you know, with Seattle coming in, you know, if we could get a team into Portland, now we've got Vegas. I mean, you know, we're growing out here on the West. So it's getting better for us West Coasters, but
right.
The East definitely has the advantage.
Talk about a road trip, Russ, as an NHL player, when you were on one. What do you like? Some of those road trips, they could be 10 days, right? Almost a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think the longest I was on is 10 or 12 days.
What are you packing?
Well, yeah, you're probably three suits, you know, six dress shirts, you know, enough underwear, socks, and But when I played, casual was no tie. So we were in a suit and tie almost every day.
And now the little pricks, they can wear whatever they want.
You know? We could wear a collared shirt. So they started letting us wear golf shirts when we were out, you know, in the warmer climates, you'd wear, or a mock turtleneck on a day off. Like pregame skate, you didn't have to wear a tie, you had to wear it to the game. So it, you know, we brought enough clothes and I mean, if you wanted, we were never in a hotel where you could get dry cleaning done. You could get stuff ironed, but you couldn't send it out because you'd be gone the next day or that after the game. But
you
just packed accordingly. It was, you know, a long haul, but fun. You know, you're out on the road with your buddies. You're playing a game. You're competing. And hopefully you get to have some fun. We always had great team meals. You know, when I was single, I'd go on the road. I got to hang out with the married guys because at home they wouldn't go out.
Yeah, right.
And so you get to hang out with guys you don't normally get to hang out with. So that was fun. And great dinners. I mean, we do the credit card game at the end. And
what's the credit card game?
So the bill comes, you divide it up evenly. And if you don't want to play the credit card game, you pay your share, including tip.
So four guys, $1,000 bill, $250 each.
Right. Yeah. And so if one guy's cheap and doesn't want to play the credit card game because he doesn't want to lose, you know, he'll put in his $250 or whatever.
Right.
So you all throw your credit card in a wine bucket. We get the waiter to come over, pull out the credit cards. The last one remaining in the wine bucket pays for the dinner. So there was a couple funny ones. Corey Hirsch.
Yeah.
Corey Hirsch playing together in Vancouver, hanging out with Dean Malcock, myself, and there's six or eight of us at a Morton Steakhouse, and he's a rookie.
Right.
Credit cards go into the bucket. Corey loses. We're in Pittsburgh. It's like $4,300.
Right.
We go to the next city a couple nights later, and Dean Malcock goes, "Kirsch, come on. You can't lose two in a row." Sure enough, he lost two in a row. Lost his entire paycheck in two meals. Oh, my God. So
poor guy.
Yeah.
I remember a guy you and I know. He took me to Morton's for the first time, which is a really, you know, nice steakhouse. Iconic steakhouse in the States, right? Highest end you can get, you know, for its day. I don't know if it's still like that or not. Are they still around, Morton's? Are they still in business?
Yeah, they're still around. It's just I think there's other ones that are more expensive, but it's price. It's not cheap.
So
it's
not cheap. I went for the first experience, and lucky, let's call him. He says, "Wait till you see the presentation here, what they do, you know." And so they come over and they you know, bring a big tray that they wheel over to the table, and the girl starts to, you know, launch in. She goes, "Okay, here's what the side dishes are tonight. These potatoes right here, they were flown in this week. They're always fresh. They're right from Idaho. Okay, we leave the skin on. It's like we do that. The broccoli, okay, we got right next door here in California. We only go with the larger size broccoli. It's tested by the chef for its crispness." Okay. And then the steaks come over. Okay. "Well, this is Angus beef. It's 30-day mold, hung for 45 days," on and on and on. And then so she does all this. It takes about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And then only my buddy, he'll say, she goes, "Sir, for you, what would you like?" And he goes, he looks at all of it and goes, "A Budweiser." Anyway, I've been to Morton's.
I thought you were gonna say, can you repeat that?
Yeah, that's well. Yeah. Used to do that all the time. We got Rusty. Our next little deal is I looked over the emails this week. We got a number of people, number of shout outs we have to give. We can do that now. The McCarty clan, who are actually relatives of mine, Russ, in London, Ontario. And all of them. Kevin is one of my sort of second cousins, probably a second nephew or something. And they're huge listeners. And I've talked about her before, but she keeps listening, although she's hard of hearing. So she's asked us to speak up. Is my aunt. I have my dad's sister, Lois, who's 98 years old, who now listens to our show in London, Ontario. So I want to say hi to all that gang. Judy Martin. Thanks a lot, Judy. She was is up in Sudbury, where I'm from, and she's got her friends, Gordon, Jackie, who aren't in the best of shape. She reached out and asked if we could give them a little kickoff for them. Sue Hopgood, okay, wanted to know how my golf date went, Russ. That was 4 months ago, Rusty.
You're in the honey. You're in the honeymoon stage.
I'm in the still the honeymoon. Well, kind of. Yeah.
Six months. Six months. And then after six, it's like, okay, I'm married.
George Rayner, thanks a lot, George, and Janice Bramhill. And, of course, my cousin Danny, my carpet's going in, Rusty. In-stock flooring, okay, right here at Edmonton, 115-77 149th Street. Check them out. They're great. They've got all sorts of sales on. They've got the red tag stuff going, 10, 20% off.
And it's the best used carpet you'll ever buy.
No, it's not. Anyway, the boys were here today.
They get it out of motels, and yeah. It's never been used.
Yeah,
never. No beer stains, no urine stains.
Hey, you're a little deep. You've had a couple today. I can tell.
No, I have not.
Not yet.
No. Nope.
That's why we always do the show at 4 o'clock your time. Well, okay, Rusty, let's talk about this other story. Before we do that, through all the shout-outs, someone wanted to know, Russ, because you've been traded a few times. What's it like getting traded the day of? Is it friendly goodbyes? Do you get to hang out for a while? Do they ship you right out of town? Do they grab you by the collar and drag you out of the hotel? What happens?
It depends where you are. If you're at the rink, you get to say goodbye to everybody. If you're in a hotel, it's, that's it. You're packing up and leaving if you're on the road and heading out. So your roommate is there, but it just depends where you are. I got traded after a game out of Vancouver to New York, like right after. It was funny. I got first star and I got traded.
Oh, no. So what happens, Russ? They call you in? Who comes? The trainer tells you the coach wants to see you or something?
It's all different. Trainer usually comes to see you and says, go see the GM or... Uh-oh. Call. You get a call like, hey, call from somebody saying, hey, call at right. Call the coach at this number. But it's different and it just depends where you are. The first time you get traded hurts the most. It's like a divorce. You think you're going to, every player wants to play for the team they were drafted for or first signed with, unless it goes sideways, of course. And then they want to get traded. But most people, when they play for a team, that's it, and they want to finish their career, well that's a pie in the sky dream. But it the first time you get traded hurts the most. It's embarrassing, I think. And then once you go to your team, they welcome you with open arms, and it's like getting drafted all over again. They're all excited with all the crap that's behind you is behind you. And now they're just looking for a fresh start and you to play as well as you can. And then, of course, when that runs out, then you go for it and just press repeat.
Yeah, right.
But the thing about getting traded is the team trading for you, they're excited to get you. So it's a fresh start. And once you get settled and stuff, it's great. But it's just a nice... It's a good way to kind of kickstart your career. And sometimes it doesn't work out for guys. They think they can trade for a player who can play with a couple of guys on their team, and they can't. And then they got to move them. So but usually they're looking for a fresh start. And they think a lot of you.
When you were thinking about your career, Russ, you're in LA now. You're going to probably live the rest of your life out there. It looks like, would you have ended up retiring in LA, Russ, if you had not have played for the Kings?
I wouldn't have retired here because I played for the Kings. I retired here because my wife's from here.
Right.
So there's even to this day, there's, we talked a little bit, mostly me. What would it be like to live here or there? And we went up to Victoria for 4 years and moved from LA in 03 up there till 07 and then moved back to LA. Mm-hmm. So she's She's lived here since she was 9 years old, other than, you know, moving away with me.
Right.
And it's a great place. I mean, other than the taxes and what's going on with this governor that we have, estates being ruined as we speak, the homelessness.
Our first political segment.
Yeah. No, I can speak. This is the truth. I mean, if you're a Democrat or you're a Republican down here, you can't deny what's going on in our state. And now both parties are starting to figure it out, that they're chasing away people and businesses out of the state. We have a homeless problem like you've never seen before. It's disgusting. We need to help these people, but we also, you can't have camps in front of people's homes. I mean, it's out of control. And I, you know,
not where you live though, not up in Wesley,
not where we live out here, but San Francisco, LA, San Diego, Santa Barbara, anyone who wants to be homeless in this country, they all move to the West Coast. Even in Canada, we have the same issues in Vancouver, Victoria.
Right.
And well, weather, people, right, from across, right. Yeah, because they come from, they want to be in the warm climate, and we've got the beaches and stuff. So we have this, it's a federal problem, not a state problem. And I've talked to Paris, like, you know what, maybe it's time to move.
Ooh.
And she'll be like, ah, and I go, okay, that means no. but you know, I do want to back up to the homeless problem, because for the listeners that don't know, my brother Jeff and I raised a lot of money for mental health in Victoria, right, in Canada, and because of our father and his mental illness and committing his suicide. So we are very compassionate towards people who have mental health problems and live on the street. And I want to help fix that problem. I don't want to turn my back on that problem. But what they're doing now is wrong. It's disgusting. And if you house somebody and build shelters, it costs the government. In Canada, I think it was $28,000 a year for every homeless person that they give a bed to. If they don't, it's $78,000 if they're out on the street. Now, those numbers could be wrong today because, you know, it's been a while since I've been up there and been involved in mental health, but it's substantial savings. But man, we have to figure this out. It is not working, and it is disgusting what's going on. And people are leaving these cities in droves. Rent in San Francisco is down 30% right now, rent rates. And people with money are like leaving. They're taking their businesses to other states, and it's only going to get worse. We have to attract people, not let them go. And it's bad. So anyways, there's my one political soapbox stance, but you asked me about leaving, and yeah, I would leave, but Paris doesn't want to go. So
right. What did you do in the other cities, Russ? I mean, you're from Victoria and you started your career in Toronto, and then you were in Montreal and Mini and New York and Vancouver. When you were there, was there ever thought that you'd go, okay, I'm going to live in Minnesota the rest of my life?
I didn't. I like Minneapolis a lot, but we were only there for 1 year and then we moved to Dallas. So I could live in Dallas, no problem. I lived there for a couple of years. And
right,
my brother's nephew lives there. I've got friends there. I could definitely go try and live in Dallas. Be tough to live there in the summer because it's so freaking hot.
Right.
Toronto. I love Toronto, and I would definitely move to Toronto. And no, with my connection with the Leafs, it would make a lot of sense for me to move there.
Right.
So Toronto and Dallas. I mean, who wouldn't want to live in New York? But they're, you know, right now they're having a hell of a problem with the same problems I was talking about in California. Mm-hmm. But Vancouver was great. I was really fortunate to live in the cities that I played in.
Yeah, no shit.
Montreal. Man. I mean, Montreal's one of the greatest cities in the world. Like BC boy growing up, you know, they're like the Maple Leafs, my age group and older, you know, it was, you either like the Leafs or the Habs.
Right. That's right.
And I grew up a Leaf fan with my dad, and then I got drafted to them. And when I got traded to the Montreal Canadiens, I was like, oh my God, my dad, if he was alive, I wonder what he would say. Yeah, and right. I remember putting the jersey on for the first time. I was playing my first game in Chicago
with Montreal, and I held the jersey up before I put it on, and I went, "Sorry, Dad," put it on. and so
but what a jersey! Hold on.
Oh yeah, and what a city! And fans are great, and they love their team. So right. Anyway, I was fortunate to be able to play in those great cities, and I'm venturous. I would have no problem. I could move to London, England, and try it. I mean, I would go to Sydney, Australia, and try it. I mean,
after the week-long party you had, your neighbors are weighing in saying they'd like you to try London, England, or Sydney, Australia too.
Oh boy. So the one neighbor is
pissed. Was he pissed?
The guy next door, he's renting. Uh-oh. And he came out on Sunday morning to watch the golf, and he had the biggest bags under his eyes. And I'm like, oh fuck, we probably kept
you
him.
You got to invite him to the party.
Well, we did last year and he didn't come. So I just, you know, figured out, well, he's got the same backyard. Why, you know what? So
it looked like he went 10 rounds with Tyson. Okay. Right. Before we go, Rusty, I was going to leave it to next week, but we want to make it a little more current. So the headline is the Coyotes won't renounce draft pick who bullied black disabled teen. Allow me to read this for a bit to bring you up to speed. The Arizona Coyotes don't plan to distance themselves from Mitchell Miller, their 2020 draft pick, who the club selected despite knowing he bullied a black developmentally disabled classmate. Quote from them, "Our fundamental mission is to ensure a safe environment, whether in schools, in our community, in hockey rinks, or in the workplace, to be free of bullying and racism." That's from Coyotes president and CEO Xavier, I want to say Gutierrez, who's the first Hispanic CEO actually in the NHL. He said in a statement, "When we first learned of Mitchell's story, it would have been easy for us to dismiss him. Many teams did. Instead, we felt it was our responsibility to be part of the solution in a real way, not just saying and doing the right things ourselves, but ensuring that others are too." Miller, who the Coyotes picked in the fourth round earlier in October, admitted in court in 2016 that he bullied Isaiah Meyer Crothers, who grew up with him in Ohio. Meyer Crothers said Miller frequently called him the N-word and Brownie while harassing him for years. He says he pretended to be my friend and made me do things I didn't want to do. In junior high, I got beat up by him. Everyone thinks he's so cool that he gets to go to the NHL, but I don't see how someone can be cool when you pick on someone and bully someone your entire life. Coyotes general manager, Bill Armstrong, who got the job before the draft but didn't take part as a condition of his hiring, confirmed Arizona scouts knew about Miller's bullying history. Gutierrez said the organization has made its expectations very clear to Miller, and they want him to become a leader in the anti-bullying and anti-racism movements. Meyer Crothers' mother, Joni, called on the team to apologize and accused it of being part of the problem. Miller has never personally apologized to Isaiah, aside from a court-mandated letter. In early September, the NHL launched a series of anti-racism initiatives, and Gutierrez was among 15 people named to the new Executive Inclusion Council, the Hockey Diversity Alliance, a group of current and former NHL players aiming to eradicate racism in the game. Initially had conversations with the league, but cut ties in early October, describing the NHL's anti-racism work as performative public relations efforts. So what do you think, Russ? The kid did admit it in court 4 or 5 years ago. To summarize here, the Coyotes knew about it and they drafted him. The family is outraged, as is the young guy who got victimized, Meyer Crothers, who got victimized in this thing. And yet they made a pretty strong statement saying, no, we're going to stick with him and we want to help him. What do you think of all that, Russ?
Well, I think, you know, it's horrible that this happened. And now this kid is going to have to change his life and his ways and his actions going forward. And he's going to have to clean up his act and his daily, you know, daily he's going to be reminded of this. I mean, it's not going to go away. And so he's going to have to work his butt off and he's going to have to prove to a lot of people that he's changed. And so he's got a lot of work ahead of him, but it's not going to be easy.
So he obviously gets a second chance here with right. the team back. Would you have done the same thing, Russ? Does this kid deserve a chance, or is it something that they just got to say, we got to wash our hands of this? There's no way we're taking on someone like this. I, for one, just thought he was too young to take the whole blame, because I believe it's a learned behavior somehow. Where did this kid, at 14 years old, he heard it somewhere, and a mentally handicapped kid.
Yeah, and thought
it was okay.
It was funny that, you know, being cool around his friends or something like that. I don't, you know. But I think that the teams, they do so much research and background checks on players. Mm-hmm. They must have met with him and felt strongly enough that he had some good character
Which he did. In fairness to the kid, he did a bunch of court-ordered stuff and spoke about it and was contrite, for sure.
Right. So that the team did their – they didn't just know about it. They found out more about him and what kind of person he is, maybe was, and now is. And so they made a decision based on who they are talking to today, not his actions when he was 14 years old. They interview and meet and get to know the person as well as you can in a short period of time. But these teams spend a lot of money on every player, a lot of time and energy, and they're not going to waste a pick on somebody who they feel is going to be a bad character in their locker room. So yeah, you're right. He's getting a second chance, and now we'll see what he does with that second chance, because it's going to be with him.
How many chances should someone get, Russ?
Well, I mean, if he's found out to do this now from any day forward here, then I would just punt him, because then he's full of shit. I wouldn't give him a second or third or fourth chance.
I agree with the team. Actually, I'm glad to see they do it. And my main reason is because he was so young when that happened. You know, if he was 20 or 21 or something like that, Russ, I might go, oh man, wait a minute here. That's a little old to be a racist, you know. So anyway, the Canucks or the Coyotes stand behind the guy, and they're not going to dismiss him from the team. And they're going to get a lot of pushback from the family. But we'll see what happens.
Hopefully, they don't just worry about this hockey player, that they get some sort of involvement in the player that was abused. And hopefully, if there's something they can do. You know, maybe there's something they can do and help. Maybe this kid needs therapy and they can help out with that. But it shouldn't just be about the kid who got drafted. It also should be about the victim.
I'll tell you where the kid's lucky, for sure, with that team, because we had him on as a guest a couple of shows ago, is what a better mentor than Rick Tocchet.
Oh, boy. Yeah. You know,
he'll be fantastic with that kid.
Physically and mentally tougher than most people.
Right.
Rick. So he's
barometer.
So this kid's going, you're right, he's going to a great team for that.
Okay, Rusty, my boy, another show in the books. I don't know where the time goes, Russ. When's the next? You didn't get kicked out, okay, of your neighborhood. You better take some time off, Russ, okay? You got to relax. Yeah. Okay?
No, I'm planning on it. I'm planning on it.
You know what? Screw that, Russ. Get into the wine cellar. Have a nice bottle of red tonight. Hair of the dog.
No, I'm fine. But maybe tomorrow.
Okay. Tune in each and every week on any podcast app. Tell all your buddies. We need you to subscribe. Okay, you got to download a show or two, and you got to subscribe. The bosses have been yelling at me every month. So thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back again next week with the one and only Russ Courtnell and me, Jungle Jim Jerome. You've been listening to The Suspenders.
The Suspendables is a weekly hockey series with Jim Jerome in Edmonton and Russ Courtnell in LA. Follow The Suspendables on Facebook and Twitter. Reach us at thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And of course, we appreciate you sharing this podcast with your group of friends.